Okay, we're starting here at the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Kaf Dalet Amud Bet. The Mishnah begins Kulit. Kulit is a bone that we bumped into before. It's the upper of the three bones of the leg of the animal, the one that's attached to the pelvic bone of the animal. There, the upper bone, the Kulit, is mentioned over here. Whether it means the Kulit in particular, or the nature of the Kulit, which is, it's Rashi's noted a number of times, the kulit has a heavy amount of marrow in it, so it's a significant amount of marrow that it possibly could reach some of the shiurim that we need for tumah. So it might be that the kulit is mentioned in particular because of the nature of it to have a lot of marrow in it, and it's just representative of other bones. Obviously, it's not only the kulit that this is true about. But kulita mate, when you're dealing with an individual who has passed away, and the kulita muktashim, and kulit of an animal that is mukdash, if you touch them, ben stumim, ben nikuvim, whether the bones are sealed, or whether there's a hole in the bone, tameh. In that case, the tumah is conveyed. So, by an individual, we're talking about tumah tameh. By the mukdashim, we're speaking about a tumah midrabanan, as differentiated from the tumah d'oraita that we're speaking about by the person who passed away. There we're speaking about a tumah d'rabanan that is imposed on the mukdashim from problems that happen with the mukdashim as a penalty to the kohanim. It's mentioned at the end of the Gemara in Psachim that the Chachamim instituted that the pigul and notar would be mitame yadayim, that would cause the kohanim's yadayim to come tamei as a penalty either for the chashtei kuna, those that were messing up the korbanot with pigul, and atzlei kuna, those that didn't have such great alacrity, and therefore there was leaving over, there was no tar of the korbanot. So as a penalty to Kohanim, they made them tamei when they came into contact, which was a significant issue. If the source of what you eat is kodashim and shuma, if you are tamei, or your hands are tamei, then you can't consume those items. That is a penalty to those individuals. We're going to see in the Gemara, that penalty included not only the basar, or here the marrow, it also included the mishamish, those that are in service of those items. And in this instance, that would be the bone that is in service of the marrow that it's holding. And therefore, the penalty midrabanan applies. So in both of these cases, you don't need to get direct access to the marrow itself, because tumat amet applies to an etzem midoraita. If you come into contact with an etzem, you're carrying an etzem, you're tamei tumat amet midoraita. The only thing an etzem doesn't have is tumat ohel, which we'll have to discuss in a minute. The Kulat, the Mukdashim, have no Tumah Midoraita. This is all in their Abonon that they impose the Tumah because of Notar, Pigul, those issues that are associated with the Kohanim. When they impose that Tumah, they applied it to Basar, but also Mishamshe, the Basar. And for that reason, coming into contact over here with the bone will make you Tameh, even though you can't touch the marrow itself. Differentiated from that are the next two cases, which are Kulit nevela, the kulit asheretz. We're speaking about these bones with regards to a nevela, which has tumat nevela, that has maga and masa, and tumat sheretz, which only has tumat maga associated with it. Hanogeh avahem stumim. If you touch those bones when they are sealed, tehorim, then there is no tumat whatsoever. We'll have to understand why that is, because the bone typically is a shomer for the marrow that is inside, and we saw before that a shomer can function to bring tuma and convey tuma. So over here it should be able to convey tuma. And then nukuvim koshu, on the other hand, if they have a hole in them, metamei b'maga, they do have the capacity of tumat maga. Rashi over here already notes that koshu doesn't really mean a koshu. It means kechuta se'ara, means a hair's breath. So if you can fit in a hair through that hole, that's already enough to allow for tumat maga to pass from the bone to the individual. But absent that hole, the marrow that is trapped inside is exactly that. It's trapped inside. Therefore, the tumah that's inside will not affect the individual who comes into contact with this bone. Not by the tumat nevela, not by the tumat sheretz. Now, the Gemara says, minayin sha'af b'masa. How do we know that this also has application by masa? Talmud lomar hanogeya v'anosei. If you touch it and if you carry it, we saw this yesterday, that these two psukim are juxtaposed. It speaks about hanogev and nivlatam. When you touch the nevela, then rakol nanosei nivlata. And anybody who carries the nevela, that juxtaposition created a hekesh to fi Rabbi Akiva, that the nigiyah and nisiyah are correlated. Et shebalichla maga, balichla masa. If you have tumat maga, then you have tumat masa. Lo ba'a l'chla maga, lo ba'a l'chla masa. You don't have tumat maga, then you don't have tumat masa. So in our scenario here, with regards to sheretz, this is irrelevant because there isn't tumat masa. It is relevant with regards to tumat nevela. Right? Tumat nevela, if the bone is sealed, there is no tumat maga. So even though for tumat masa, you don't have to come into contact with the basar, nevertheless, carrying the bone here will not result in tumat masa because there is no tumat maga. The absence of tumat maga makes it that tumat masa also does not apply. If you have a hole in the bone where there is the possibility now of tumat maga, then there also will be tumat masa. That correlation makes it that the tumat nevela, if the bone is sealed, has no impact on the individual, both because you can't have any nigia, which is necessary over here. Again, we'll have to discuss why the shomer is not relevant. And then, in addition, there will be no tumat masa. Once there's no tumat maga, there's also no tumat masa. Right, so now the Gemara makes a deal at the beginning of the Mishnah, nogeya in, ava mahalil lo. That what is true in the first statement of the Mishnah about kulit hamet, by the kulit hamet, it says, hanogeya behen. If you come into contact with it, then you are tameh. That means there is tumat maga. What is absent from the Mishnah is tumat ohel. And we mentioned before that etzem, a bone, only has tumat maga and masa. It does not have tumat ohel. What the Gemara is supposing over here is that the moach, the marrow that's inside the bone, should be kezayit of besaramet, and kezayit of besaramet does have tumat ohel. The fact that there is no tumat ohel mentioned in the Mishnah, the Gemara wants to be medayik from that, that nogeya in, that the Mishnah says there is tumat negiya, but tumat ohel is not there. Bali Tosafot already asked, how does the Gemara know that that's a good deal? How does the Gemara know to make the deal out of the Mishnah over here that nogeya in mahil lo? You could have made the same deal, which is nogeya in and no say no. But that's not true. By the case of the bone over here, even though it says nogeya, if you're no say it, you're also tameh, tumat tameh. So how does the Gemara know to make this nogeya and not mahil versus nogeya and not no say? So the Bali Tosafot in the end say that tumat masa lo itztrich lemitne. The Mishnah doesn't have to mention tumat no say, because there's no chiddush in it. It's not a chiddush that there is tumat masa over here. There would be a chiddush if there was tumat ohel over here. And therefore, if there was tumat ohel, the Mishnah would have to mention it. The fact that it doesn't mention it is an indication that there must be something that we need to discover over here as to why there's no tumat ohel. Tumat masa basically comes along with tumat maga. You would have assumed if there's tumat maga by the bone, there is tumat masa by tumat demet. Tumat ohel is a step up. Bones don't normally have tumat ohel. So if you don't mention it, that means that you're telling me there is no tumat ohel over here. And why not? If it's a kulit and has marrow inside of it, why don't you have kezayit basar min hamet? And that's what the Gemara is asking now. Echidami. What's the scenario? If there's basar on the outside of the bone, up to amount of a kezayit, then boel nami li tameh. Then also there should be tumat ohel. So why doesn't the Mishnah mention that? It must be the leka kezayit basar. There is no basar on the outside. If there was kezayit a moach inside, now it's trapped inside. So maybe there should not be any tumat ohel. We have a principle, tuma bokat veola. In the cases where tuma is trapped, the tuma then bursts out, breaks forth, and goes up unlimited upwards and unlimited downwards. Ba'ohel nami litameh. Then also by ohel it should have a din of tuma. As Rashi says over here, kol chalal, any space, shein bo tefach, that does not have a tefach of an airspace in it, eino chotzeitz bifnei hamet, does not stop the movement of tuma. And that's the meaning over here of bokat ve'ola. The marrow that is contained inside the bone does not have enough space in it to be contained within the bone as if there was tumat ohel in the bone and not to spread outwards. If the tuma is in there without a sufficient tefach cubed around it of space, then it bursts out, meaning that it breaks out. Even though it's trapped inside the bone, the tumah comes out of the bone. If that's the case, you have a bone inside of a house, that bone that has the marrow contained inside of it, that marrow causes the tumah to break out of the bone, and then make it that there's tumah tamed in the house, and there should be tumah oil. So why, again, is there no tumah oil over here? So you must have to say, the lekek is zayit moach bifnit, that there isn't sufficient marrow inside of the bone to reach the minimum shiur of a kezayit that would be necessary for tumat hamet ba'ohel. Gemara says, okay, If there is such a concept that when there's marrow inside of the bone, it is influential in helping the basar, the flesh on the bone, to regenerate, then also aver ma'al yohi. Then it becomes a full-fledged aver, ba'ohel nami li tameh. It should also become tameh tumat ohel. So in order to be tameh tumat ohel, there are many items that have a din of tumat ohel. Etzem is one of the ones that doesn't have tumat ohel, unless it reaches an aggregate number of atzamot, which the Mishnayot and Olot speak about how many atzamot that you need in order to reach the level that it'll give you tumat ohel. But a single bone, or an etzem kisora, which is the size of a barley seed, is tamei tumat maga and tumat masa, but not tumat ohel. On the other hand, if you have a kezayit basar min hameit, you have tumat ohel. If you have a full eber, if you have a full limb of a mate, then you also have a din of tumat ohel. So over here, the Gemara says, we're eliminating all the possibilities that there's a kezayit basar here. Say no basar on the outside, not enough marrow on the inside. But now the Gemara is dealing with a concept that the marrow on the inside is not only influential on the marrow internally, but has impact on the basar, the flesh that is on the bone. If this bone was in a live animal, and they lost the basar around the bone, or something happened to the basar that was around the bone, was injured, wounded, something happened to it, then the marrow inside the bone would allow that basar to regrow. It would cause a regeneration of the flesh that is around it. If that is the case, then in theory, any bone that you have is also an aver, because an aver means a bone with the basar on it. It's the full entity. But here, since it can regenerate its own basar because of the marrow inside, then it gets this designation of being an aver. Now Rashi takes it one step further and says that imkain below basar u below moach, even if it has no flesh on it and no marrow inside of it, chashiv aver kol etzem chalul, every hollow bone then would have a din of being an aver. Now Rashi took that step because otherwise the Gemara could have had an easy answer to our Mishnah. The case in our Mishnah, if you believe that marrow causes aruka, causes the regeneration or the recovery of the basar on the outside, Gemara says, then every bone is considered an aver and you should have tumat ohel. The easiest answer the Gemara could have given, and that's what Bali says, let's say, forced Rashi to say this, is that then you could have just answered the bone in the Mishnah is a hollow bone. There's no marrow in it. And if that's the case, then you have a bone that's tumat maga masa, not tumat ohel. There'd be the answer. The fact that the Gemara didn't go that way makes Rashi say what we just read in Rashi, that even if the bone has no marrow in it, not only can it regenerate when there's marrow, the basar on top, when the bone has no marrow, it can regenerate the marrow. So if the bone been in a live animal, it would replace its marrow, and then when it's replaced the marrow, it replaces the basar on top. That makes it, every bone is an aver. Tosafot says, Rashi said this, v'chinam dachak. He didn't have to go that far. D'minkat kulit, mashma d'vari d'ika moach k'tzat. He says, you can't answer in the end that their bone is hollow and there's nothing inside of it, because then otherwise, why did the Mishnah pick the kulit? If they wanted to pick a bone that has no marrow in it, it would have picked any other bone, or it just said etzem. The fact that it picked kulit in particular, which we know has marrow in it, that's why that's not a good answer. And therefore, Rashi's diuk is not necessarily mukhrach, and Tosafot says he went too far. The Gemara is assuming that there has to be marrow there for basar that grow on top of it. You can't have a bone that is hollow and then recreate the marrow, and then after that regenerate the basar afterwards. But nevertheless, you have here now a problem, which is that if there is marrow inside of the bone, and if you are of the belief that marrow causes basar to grow on top in a live animal, that means that every bone that has marrow in it has a classification of being an aver. Once you have an aver, it's meant to make tumat mate ba'ohel. And according to Rashi, even one step further, if it doesn't even have marrow in it, it will regrow the marrow, regenerate the marrow, and then regrow the basar. So every bone that once had marrow in it will be classified as an aver. So if it's an aver maliyohi, ba'ohel nami litame. If it's classified as a full aver, then it should have tumat ohel as well. So I'm reviewing the braid of Yechia. Zotomeret. Here, from this, you would conclude, moach bifnim, enam alera ruka, mibachut. The simple answer is that that's just not the case. That the marrow on the inside does not regenerate the basar on the outside. And if that's true, then there's not going to be a din of aver, and that's your solution to the problem over here. You have a kulit bone that does not have a kezayit basar on it, doesn't have a kezayit of marrow inside of it, and we don't believe that the marrow would have been regenerated basar, so it's not an aver. And that's why you have Tumat Maga and Masa, but not Tumat Oel. Where it says, okay, from Ayukimta, what did you establish now that the Mishnah is speaking about? The Leka Kizayit, that the bone does not have a Kizayit worth of Basar in it. Wait a minute. That works well for the Tumat Mate, but then take one step forward, and the next case in the Mishnah is Kulit HaMukdashim. So by Kulit HaMukdashim, you need a minimum shiur in order to be Tamei for Notar, in order to be Tamei for Pigul, you need at least a minimum shiur. The Gemara in Pesachim has a machloket as to whether the shiur is Kazayit or Kabetza, but at least you need that shiur in order for it to be Tamei. So how then can you have the case of Tumat Tamei speaking about when there's not a Kazayit, and then the case of Mukdashim speaking about when there is a Kazayit? You have to be consistent. They're in the Mishnah together. Vitu, Kulit Nevela, Vikulit Sheretz. And similarly, when it comes to the Nevela and Sheretz, Ki Nikvu, when they have a hole in them, which now makes it that they're subject to Tumat Maga and Tumat Masa, Amay Mitamu. Why are they Tamei in the case of the Mishnah? They don't reach the minimum shiur of a Kazayit. At least for a Tumat Nevela, you would have to reach the minimum shiur of a Kazayit. For Tumat Sheretz, it might be a lower threshold of Tumat Kiadasha. But either way, you still need to meet these minimum requirements in order for it to be Tamei. So how could it be that you don't meet the threshold by Tumat Tamei, but by all the other cases of the Mishnah, you're meeting the threshold to make it Tamei? The Gemara says, Halokasha, Reisha, Deleka Kizayit, Seifa, Dika Kizayit, Einon Chanami. We're willing to bifurcate the Mishnah and say, the case by Kulit Tamei is whether it's less than a Kizayit worth of marrow. The remainder of the Mishnah is dealing where you have a Kazayit of those items. Umay Kamash Malan, as Rashi says over here, what are you teaching us that we didn't know before? You're teaching me that a Kazayit Nevela is Mitabe Mamaga and Masa. Kazayit Sheres is Mitame Bimaga. Mukdashim that have a Kazayit worth, they're Mitame Bimaga. And Tumatame with less than a Kazayit doesn't make Tumata Ohel. All of those are explicit Mishnayot throughout Shas. I don't need a Mishnah to tell me that in the middle of Chulin. I could have seen the Mishnayot in Ohalot, the Mishnayot in Tarot, all the other places where they discuss Inyan of Tumat and Tara, that would have told us that information. You're not telling me anything new. Where it says, Mile, Mile, Kimash Malan. One by one, you have to take each instance here. Each one of them has a Chiddush in it. Reisha, Kimash Malan. The Reisha, meaning the case of Tumat Mate, teaches us, the Moach Mibifnim, Enu Malera Flam Abachutz, that it doesn't cause regeneration of the Basar on the outside. And for that reason, when you have less than a Kazayit of marrow, the bone is Mitamei Tumat Magam Asa, but not Ohel, because it's not classified as an Aver, it's only classified as an Etzem, and an Etzem doesn't have Tumat Ohel. So that's the Chiddush of the first case in the Mishnah. Mukdashim, the fact that the Mukdashim have a Kazayit in it, that's what causes Tumah. The Chiddush there is Maika Mashmalan, Shimush Notar Miltahi. This is what we already noted in the Mishnah, that something in service of Notar becomes or takes on the properties of the Notar itself. Over here, the Notar is the marrow that's inside of the bone. And if you have marrow inside of the bone that is a Kazayit worth of marrow, then you're going to be Tamei Tumah Derabanan of the Mukdashim. But that is not as obvious as you would have thought. There's a bone surrounding the marrow. So why are you Tamei? The answer is that that's the Chiddush. And Chazal, when they put this Takana in place, it not only included Notar and Pigol, but Mishamshe Notar and Pigol. All those things that are in service, they give off the same Tumah as the marrow itself or as the Basar itself. Damar Mari Baravua, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Atzamot Kodoshim Shishimshu Notar Mitami Metayadayim. Atzamot of Kodeshim that were in service of Notar, they caused the hands to become Tmeim. And that is because Hov Naseh Basis, the Devar Asur, because it becomes a carrying mechanism for something that is Asur. It's a concept that's really in Shabbat with regards to Muksa, but over here it's speaking about it within the realm of Tumah. The bone becomes the mechanism for carrying or moving the marrow that's inside of it, and in that capacity, it has Tumah Midrabanan. The question is now, what was the Chiddush of Mari Baravua versus our Mishnah? If that's the diuk out of the Mishnah, why do I need Mari Baravua and Amora to tell me something that's now a Kamash Malan out of our Mishnah? The Balei HaTosafot over here explained, V'nire, the Rav Mari Yashmi'inan, Rav Mari's Chiddush is that, Atzamot Shishim Shunotar Kvar, that they had marrow in them in the past. Afilu ein behem achshav klum. Even though there's no longer any marrow in them, they are still tmeim. That's the chiddush of Rav Mari. Our Mishnah, ikal ukmei bidika kati kizayit. Our Mishnah is a case where there's still marrow in the bone. Our Mishnah establishes the fact that there is such a concept of shimush notar, and so when the marrow is still in the bone itself will have tumat notar, or tumat pigol, based on that takanat chachamim. Rav Mari takes it one step further and says, even if a bone no longer has the marrow in it, and it once was in shimush notar, or once was in shimush of pigol, that's enough to say that the bone retains its tumat, even after the notar or pigul has been removed from the bone. That's the chiddush of the Amora of Mari, but the concept's the same, that shimush notar is impactful. Nevela, the chiddush by nevela, that you have a kezayit of marrow inside, that now there is tumat nevela. Afagav the ikke kezayit, nikvain, lo nikvelo. That's the chiddush by nevela, that even though you have a full kezayit worth of marrow inside, which would convey tumat nevela, nevertheless, there is no tumat nevela over here. Only if you puncture a hole in it does it have a din of tumat maga, tumat nevela. Absent the hole, there is no din of nevela. And that's because sukim, we had darshan them yesterday as well, which is that in order for there to be tumat maga, you have to have access to the item. If you don't have access to the item, then there is no tumat maga. Abaye disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Chiya, and says, Olam moach mibifnim, male aruka mibachutz. Disagrees and says that marrow does have the capacity to have regeneration of the flesh that's on it, and therefore the bone that has marrow in it is a would then create a situation that it's an aver, and there should have been tumat oel in our Mishnah. V'hochamai skinan. So how come in our Mishnah there is no tumat oel? V'sheshifa. It's a case where he scraped it down. The way Rashi describes it over here, that's a case where you, nasra, you planed it, b'magal or b'sakin, you use some sort of sharp instrument, and you scrape the layer off, the first layer off of the bone, or the top layer off the bone. Once you do that, it impedes the ability of the bone to regenerate the basar on top. So that's what we're speaking about, the type of bone that we're speaking in our Mishnah. Uche de Rabbi Elazar, similar to the member of Rabbi Elazar, Dama Rabbi Elazar, kulit shishafa, if you have a thigh bone that is scraped off, la arko tmeya. If you do it lengthwise on the bone, it still will have din of tuma. Lirochba, if you do it around the circumference of the bone, tehora, then it is tahor. The simanich, and the way to remember that is dikwa, the palm tree. In a palm tree, if you scrape up the bark vertically on the tree, it won't impact the tree. If you cut off the bark around the circumference of the tree, it will kill the tree. Rashi says the reason being that the sap needs the capacity to flow up and down the trunk of the tree. If you leave the bark on one side, then the sap can't go up on the side that you cut vertically. You stripped off the bark vertically, but it can go up on the other side. When you do it around the circumference, then it blocks the ability for any of the sap to move up and down the tree because you've cut the bark. Whether that's the reason or some other reason, the circumference cutting it around leaves no capacity for the tree to continue to flourish, as opposed to when you cut it up and down and leave bark on the other side, it would have the capacity to flourish. So that's the siman over here. When you scrape the bone along the long ways of the bone, that bone will still have the capacity to regenerate basar. If you do it around the circumference of the bone, that prevents the flow of whatever it is back and forth on the bone, and therefore it won't regenerate the basar in that instance. So Abaye, leaning on this view of Rabbi Elazar, explains the Mishnah as being a case, at least for the first case in our Mishnah, Kulita Meit, as a case where there's a bone that does not have basar on it. It does have marrow inside of it, which should have then meant that basar would grow when it's an aver and it should have tumat ol. But in our case, it's an exception because he scraped the bone, which would not have allowed the bone then to regenerate the basar. Once you've done that, then you don't have an aver anymore. You just have a bone, and a bone with marrow below the level of a kezayit does not have tumat oel. But Abaye will then agree with the explanation before Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Chiya that the remaining cases in the Mishnah are cases of kezayit. It's only that he's disagreeing about that fundamental point about whether marrow has the capacity to regenerate or not. That's the first case, kulita meit, in the Mishnah. Other than that, Abaye agrees with the remainder of the Mishnah that everything there is speaking about a kezayit worth of marrow in the bone. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ula. So Rabbi Yochanan comes up with a different solution to the Mishnah. De'ika kizayit, umoach mibifnim male aruka mibachutz. He says that there is a kizayit over here, and moach bifnim male aruka. And similar to Abai, he believes that if you have marrow on the inside, it will regenerate the basar on the outside. My nugeya. Well now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's no question the kulit tomato beer should be mitameh tumat olel. It has a kazayit basar on it, which causes tumat olel. And if marrow generates basar on the outside, it's also an aver. And an aver is also subject to tumat olel. So then, what is he going to do with the fact that the Mishnah says nogeya and does not say tumat olel? Umay nogeya diktoni mahayil. He says the word nogeya subsumes within it not only nigia, but also ohel. And as Rashi says over here, Rabbi Yochanan, lo mikminim atita mitrei tame. He didn't want the Mishnah to have two sections to it. One section that has a kazayit, and one section that does not have a kazayit. He'd much rather have the whole Mishnah speaking about a kazayit. So the Gemara says, v'i moach mibifnim male aruka mibachutz, kulit nevela, mikulit asheretz, kilonikvu amai teorim. So now, if you believe, like Abaye, or like Rabbi Yochanan, that when you have marrow on the inside, that the basar on the outside regenerates, then we already explained by kulita mate that result in tumat ol. For Abaye, you avoided the problem by saying you scraped the bone and prevented it from happening. For Rabbi Yochanan, he said, "Ein okanami, there is tumat ol here, and the word nogeya subsumes within it tumat ha ol." But once you've done that, according to both Abaye and Rabbi Yochanan, then why don't we have the same problem by the case of the kulita nevela and the kulita sheretz? Because if the etzem itself is an aver, according to Rashi, even without marrow inside of it, then it should be mitamei, absent the stima. You don't even need the break in the bone to be mitamei, because it itself is now an aver. Given that it's an aver, then it should also be mitamei the outside. Now, for Abaye, you could solve the problem again and just say they scraped the bone down. And therefore, in this case, when you scrape the bone down, then there's no din of aver because it can't grow the basar back on the outside. So for Abaye, marrow does cause regeneration of basar. The reason that in our case it's not an aver is because you scrape the bone and that can't happen anymore. And that's why when you have less than a kazayit worth of marrow on the inside, that it's not a problem. With the other cases, he said there was a kazayit worth of marrow in those cases. The reason that, again, it's not considered to be an aver is because you scrape the bone. And therefore there's no din of aver. But Rabbi Yochanan, who says that in the first case in the Mishnah, it is male aruka, and there is a kizayit basar over here, and he doesn't have this concept that you stop the regeneration of the basar, but in doing that, now he opens up another problem, which is, he says that the first case in the Mishnah is a case where there is tumat ol, because it is male aruka, it would regrow the basar, it is an aver, there is kizayit basar, and you have a problem of tumat ol, then why don't you have the same problem by sheretz and by nevela? If they are an aver, they're mitamei, even if you don't have touch the marrow on the inside. An aver is inherently tamei, tumat nevela, or tumat sheretz, independent of whether you come into contact with the basar part of it. If it's classified as an aver, the aver itself will be mitamei, and then why don't you have that problem by the tumat sheretz and tumat nevela, that when the bone is sealed, you should still be tamei, irrespective of whether there's a hole in it or not a hole in it. So the Gemara answers, what's the case in the Mishnah? You have a kezayit worth of moach inside the bone that is bumping around. That means two things. As Rashi explains over here, that mitkashkesh means it's yavesh. The marrow has dried out. And now it's moving around inside of the hollowness of the bone. In that case, it's not male aruka. Then that case does not have the capacity to regenerate. Only, quote-unquote, live marrow or healthy marrow would cause basar on the outside to regenerate. But here we're speaking about marrow, in essence, that is, quote-unquote, dead. It's marrow that's dried out. Now, not only dried out, it's moving around, bouncing around inside of it, which is an indication, the fact that this marrow is not going to be successful at creating basar on the outside. So now, you have a kazayit worth. That kazayit worth will cause tuma. The tumatamate, it will create a problem of tumat oil. By the case of nevela and sheretz, it will create a problem of tumat maga. But in the end, you still have to get in contact with it in order for there to be tumat maga, and that's why you need the hole in the bone. The marrow itself does not transform the aver, the bone into an aver now, because it's not live marrow. It's not marrow that can regenerate basar. And therefore, all you're left now with is a bone. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Gabe mate, tuma bokat vola. By the tumata mate, when you have a kazayit worth of marrow on the inside, it bursts out because there's not a sufficient ohel around it to contain it. And therefore, it breaks out. And that's why you have tumat ohel from the bone that has a kazayit worth of marrow inside of it. Nevela came into mitkashkeshu, nikvayin, lo nikvalo. On the other hand, by the nevela, in order to have tumat maga, you need to come in contact with the marrow. The only way to do that is to have a hole in the bone. Absent a hole in the bone, you can't come into contact with the marrow. Because the marrow, being that it's mitkakesh, does not convert the bone into an aver. And therefore, your only tumah you have here is tumat basar, which is the marrow on the inside. And you need access to that in order to be tameh. Had it been that the marrow was alive in Ochanami, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you would have had a problem of malei arukah, which would have transformed the item into an aver. If it was an aver, then you'd be tameh, even if you didn't come into contact with the marrow, just touching the bone, which is the aver now, would have been sufficient to make you tameh. So, Amar Rabbi Avin, Vitema Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Afan Nan Namitanina. We also have a Mishnah that is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention over here that the word Nogeya subsumes within it the word the Tumata Ohel, which is Rabbi Yochanan's big assumption over here. He rejects Abaye's solution. The Abaye Tosafot over here speculate the reason that he doesn't answer like Abaye, that when you scrape the bone, that prevents the Malei Arukah. That could be for one of two reasons. You could either think that that is not what the Mishnah is speaking about. It seems too far-fetched to be the situation in the case in the Mishnah. Or it could be that he believes, unlike Rabbi Elazar, that when it comes to the scraping of the bone, that it doesn't stop the Malei Arukah. It would still regenerate the basar on the outside. Therefore, he can't avail himself of the answer that Abaye used. So for that reason, Rabbi Yochanan went to the answer that Nogeya subsumed within it, Tumat Oel. And in Ochanami, in our Mishnah, there is Tumat Oel. So the reason that he wants to keep the Mishnah consistent is having a Kazayit, and also possibly that his belief that Shifa doesn't help over here, so he was left with the explanation of the Mishnah being that there is Tumat Oel and subsumed under Nogeya. And in the other cases, the reason that you don't have Aver, even though it's Malei Arukah, because it was dead, quote-unquote, marrow, and therefore it doesn't regenerate Basar. And here we have also Avanam Tanina Anogea Bichatzika Zayit Uma Ahail Al Chatzika Zayit O Chatzika Zayit Ma'il Alav Tamei. Tumat Ohel can happen in a number of ways. There are three different ways that you can have Tumat Ohel. One possibility of Tumat Ohel is the individual is on top of the Tumah. You have a Kazayit Basar Min Amate, and a person passes on top of that Kazayit Amate. He was Ma'ahil on the Tumat Amate. That's one type of ohel that can make you tamet. The other way around, which is if the individual is sitting under the kazayit min amet, which means that the kazayit amet is mahahil on the individual himself. The third type of tumat ohel is where both the individual and the kazayit basar are in the same house, for instance, under the same cover, a roof. That's tumat ohel, and truthfully, that's the classic tumat ohel min haTorah, which is when you enter into a house, that there's a mate in there, that you become tamei tumat tamei. Those are the three different types of tumat oil that you can have. Now, we bring a Mishnah in Olot that says, Hanogeya bikechatzi zayit, umahil al chatzi kezayit. A person's dad touching a half kezayit minamate, and he's also above a chatzi kezayit minamate. He has a kezayit worth a mate in combination. The chatzi kezayit that he's touching, and the chatzi kezayit that he's standing on top of. Oh, chatzi kezayit ma'ilala. Or in the other scenario where there's a chatzi kezayit above him, plus he's touching a chatzi kezayit. In that case, he is tamei. So we combine the chatzi kezayit that he's touching, as well as the chatzi kezayit of Oel, bring them together, and we make it in that he's now has a kezayit min amate, then he is tamei. So how come you're allowed to combine these two chatzi kezayitim? Iyamart bishlama chatshmahu. If you say that Nogeya and Ohel are the same category of Tumah, then it makes sense. That's why they are joined together to get you to a Kazayit Basar. If you tell me that Nogeya is one area of Tumah, Ohel is a totally different area of Tumah, how can you bring them together? How could you join them together? You continue on in the Mishnayot and Ohelot, Zaklal. This is the principle. Koshu mishem echad mitzdareif vitamei. Anything that is from the same category of tuma can be joined together to make you tamei. Mishnei shemot tahor. If it's from two different categories, it is tahor. So what you see from this Mishnah in Olot is Nogeya and Ol are in the same category of tuma. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's right when the Mishnah says Nogeya over here. Nogeya can be both Nogeya and Ol because it's really the same category of tuma. And obviously, this would not be like Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus that we saw yesterday, who says, Eno Nogeya, Becholzer ben Nogeya. Over here, obviously, you can't do that because the Ol and the Nogeya are being mitzdarei. Where it says, is that really true? Ella Mai. So what are you going to conclude from that? Chachmahu. That it's one name. Nogeya and Mayil are one name. Ema Seifa. Just continue on in the Mishnah, and it says, about Anogeya Bichachatzi Meit. If you are touching a chatzi kazayit of mate, and then in addition to that, you're in the same house, under the same roof as another chatzi kazayit of a mate, tahor, it doesn't work. So wait a minute, you just told me that Ol and Nogeya are the same shame. So now what you see is that Ol comes in different forms. There's Ol when you're above the tumat mate. There's Ol when the Tumat HaMeit is above you. And we said there's Ol where you're under the same roof as the Tumat HaMeit. The Mishnah differentiates between those and says when you're above it or it's above you and you're touching, there we combine it. But in a case where you're touching it and you're under the same roof as the Chatzi Kazayit Min HaMeit, doesn't work. V'chachmahu, if you told me that Nogei and Ol derived from the same category, Amai Tahor. Why is it Tahor in this case? Ela Kasha Reisha. So then, what are you going to do with the Reisha? Meaning that, okay, you're right. So there is a problem now for Rabbi Yochanan, but not only is there a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, there's also a problem in the Mishnah. How do you explain the difference in the Mishnah? Why does the Mishnah in those first two cases say they can, Chatzik and Zaytim can be combined, and the Mishnah in the latter cases says they can't be combined? So I'm Rabbi Zera, Bituma, Ritzutza, Ben Beit Migdalim, Askinan, Vein Beim Poteach Tefach, the tkula negia he. Depends on how this tuma is being passed, and it's not your classic case of tumat oel. The classic case of tumat oel is where you're under the same roof as the tuma. So now, tumat oel is not classified like negia. There is a case where there is tumat negia from quote-unquote tumat oel. That's in an instance where you have the case that the Gemara lays out over here. You have two migdalim. Now, migdalim over here don't mean necessarily towers. They can mean two chests. You have like a chest of drawers, two chests of drawers right next to each other in very tight quarters. And then right between them is a chatzi kazayit min hameit that's between them. There's not a tefach worth of space between them or above them to create an oel. Tekula negiyahi. That is classified as being negiyah because it is tuma that is ritzutza. As Rashi says over here, Kodavar shein lo makom revach kare ratzutz. Anything that doesn't have airspace around it is called ratzutz. Ratzutz means like it's just blocked in place, blocked into something without any breathing room, without any space around it. So this tumat hameit that is sitting between the space between the drawers or the chest of drawers is in a space that's locked in, that's not giving it quote unquote breathing room. In that case, it becomes tuma that is bokat. That breaks out and goes up and goes down. That tuma ritzutza now has a status as if you have touched it. So now there is certain types of tuma that create a simulation of nigia. There are other cases where tuma toel does not do that. So in the case where you're under the same roof as the tuma, that's not tuma ritzutza, that's your classic case of tuma toel. In tuma toel, that's separate than tuma nigia. On the other hand, where you're on top of a piece of kazayit min hameit, where the kazayit min hameit doesn't have sufficient room, and therefore the tuma breaks out upwards, it's not being contained by an ol, it's bursting out because there's not sufficient space around it to contain it. In that case, when you are mahil alav, when you go over that tuma, it's as if you came into contact with it. Or, if you went under that tuma, it's as if you came into contact with it. Says Rashi says over here, it's a case where these chests were very tall, and he leans over, and he now is ma'il on that. That is kari nigiyah. That's called nigiyah, and Rashi explains why. The Kevan, the Halacha, the Moshe Mitzinai. There is a Halacha, the Moshe Mitzinai. The Tuma, Ritzutza, Bokat. Whenever you have Tuma, Ritzutza, it bursts open and upwards. Havikaman, the Mali, Tuma, Kochlau, Sven Shnei Migdalim. Zef, the Tuma fills in the entire space between these chests. Umiha, Lotisaye, the Rabbi Yochanan. But now you have no more proof to Rabbi Yochanan, because at this point, you have no proof that Oel and Nigia are called the same thing. It's not true. Oel is its own category. Nigia is its own category. That's why in the Sefer of the Mishnah, when you have something that is Mahil on both you and the Tumah, they don't combine with the Chatzi Zayit that you are touching. Because all of the Nigia are totally separate tracks. So then how come in the first two cases of the Mishnah, we combined the Oel with the Nigia? That's because it was a different type of Oel. It wasn't real Oel, which is your ma'ahil on an item. It's a case where you have tuma ritzutza. You have tuma that is locked into a very small space that causes it to what's called bokat, break upwards and break downwards, which is the tuma goes ad l'rakia, and the tuma goes down until whatever depth you are. And therefore, if you pass over it or go under it, you're going to be tamei tumat hamet because of that. And that tuma tamet has a din like nigia. And that's because there we look at it as if the tuma is filled the area going up, filled the area going down, and as if you came into contact with the tuma over there. Which means that conceptually that Ohel was working in a different manner. Ohel is going to be like Zeret HaKatuv. It has nothing to do with the house being full of tuma, because otherwise it would be then like this Nigia. So that's how Rashi explains the difference over here. Tosafot then points out that if it Tumat Ritzutza is the only thing that's classified as having Nigia, then why did the Seifa of the Mishnah there use Hamshacha as the case where you cannot combine Nigia and Ohel? Why didn't you say it was a case where it wasn't Tumat Ritzutza? And so Tosafot comes to the conclusion that it must be that both cases are cases of Tumat Ritzutza, the Reisha and the Seifa, and despite the fact that it's Tumat Ritzutza, the Hamshacha, it would not be classified as Nigia. Others like the Maharam and the Tosafot Rabbi Akiva Eiger say that the reason it used Hamshacha in the Seifa case there in the Mishnah is because that's the sole case where Tuma Ritzutza has no impact. And that is when you have Tuma Ritzutza that goes up, if you have Hamshacha over there, it would not spread the Tuma. Unlike the Tosafot who thinks that it does spread the Tuma, it just doesn't have a din of Nigia. They think that there's no Hamshacha whatsoever. And so what the Seifa is saying is, it is not a case of Tuma Ritzutza. And that's why it used Hamshacha, because Hamshacha is not relevant by the case of Ritzutza. And by saying it's Hamshacha, it's basically saying the same thing as saying that it wasn't Tuma Ritzutza. So then, Uman Tana Dikari Le'ol Nogeya. So then, in the end, what are we going to do for Rabbi Yochanan that says that Nogeya is Mahil? We thought we had a proof from a Mishnah before, but now we just dismissed that proof because we said the Mishnah has two different cases that undermine, conceptually, that an Oel and a Gia are the same category, and it really is two categories. And the unique case in the Reisha is the case of Tumat Bokat and not Tumat HaOel. So now, where does Rabbi Yochanan get this idea that Tumat Nigia subsumes within it Tumat Oel? That is based on Rabbi Yossi's Shita. Uman Tana Dekari Oel Nogeya. There is a Tana that calls Oel Nogeya, and that is Rabbi Yossi. Titania. So we have a bright, Rabbi Yossi Omer. Melo Tarvad Rekev. If you have a, whether it's a spoon or a ladle full of rot, the rot here means rekev hamet. It is the decomposition of the mate, the earth that contains within it the decomposition of the mate. If you take a spoonful, a ladle full of that, mitamei b'maga, ubemasa, ubeoel. It has all the tumot that are associated with tumatamet, maga, masa, and oel. Bishlama b'masa ubeoel. I understand why you have Tumat Masa, and I understand why you have Tumat Oel. Because, HaKatoin Lekulei. In both of those cases, you have, either by Masa, you're carrying the entirety of the ladle, or the entirety of the spoon's worth, VaKamaila Kulei. Or if you're in an Oel, the Oel is over the entirety of that Rekib that you have there. Aval Nogeya, when you touch it, HaLonagabi Kulei. It is disparate objects that are in the spoon. The spoon or the ladle has within it the earth that is this rotted, decomposed mate. And when you touch it, you don't touch everything in there. You touch whatever you come into contact with. All the other little pieces that are separate from it, you're not touching them. So then why is there Tumat Nigia? Elalav Shmamina Mainogeya. So then, what is the meaning of the word nogeya when Rabbi Yossi says you have tumat maga, masa, and ol? It means mahil. It really means tumat ol. It says that's really nice shot. Vahaktani nogeya, vahaktani mahil. Rabbi Yossi himself says that there's tumat maga, masa, and ol. If you're telling me that maga means ol, then why do you need ol and ol twice in that statement of Rabbi Yossi? Amar Abaye, lamata mitefach, ol nigiya, lamala mitefach, ol greda. There are two types of OL. When the OL is within a tefach of the mate, then it's classified as tumat nigia. When the OL is more than a tefach over the mate, then it is called tumat ha-OL. So they're both tumat OL, but the tumat OL comes in different forms. There's a tumat OL, which is when you are in close proximity to the mate. That's when it is classified as tumat nigia, quote-unquote. And then there is a tumat ohel that comes when there's more distance between the mate and the ohel. Now, as Rashi says over here, ulu baye lo mitukma matnitin Rabbi Yochanan. The way Abaye is explaining Rabbi Yossi, that's not going to help Rabbi Yochanan, because the only time that Abaye says that you consider tumata ohel to be nigia, or you call it nigia, is when it's very close proximity to the mate itself, within a tefach of the mate. And we never don't see any qualification like that in our Mishnah, that it limits it to tumat ol only in a case where it's within a tefach. So according to Abaye, as Rashi says here, he's just trying to solve the problem for Rabbi Yossi. How is there tumat maga according to Rabbi Yossi? The answer is, it's really tumat ol. If you have tumat maga and tumat ol and they both mean ol, what's the difference between them? That's what Abaye is solving. That there's a tumat ol that's called negiyah, which is when you're in very close proximity to the mate, because it creates it as if you're touching the mate. And then there's another OL which is further away, which has a din of OL. But that won't help us in terms of Rabbi Yochanan, but it will help us in terms of Rabbi Yossi in explaining Rabbi Yossi's shita. Rova amar, afilu lamala mitefach, nami ol nigiyahu. Even above a tefach, when you have an OL over the mate, the kazayit min a mate, it has a din of nigiyah. Ve'echi dami ol greida. So then what's a normal case of OL? If OL, when you're over the item, is called nigiyah, then what's an OL that's not called Nigiyah? The answer is Bam Shaka. That's what we noted before. There are three different types of Tumat OL. There's Tumat OL when you're over the Gezaita mate. There's an OL when the Gezaita mate is above you. And then there's an OL mate when you and the Gezaita are under the same roof, under the, and that's called Hamshaka. As Rebbe says, Tumat OL is a classic case of Tumat OL is when you have Hamshaka. You're under the same roof as the Tumat mate. That's called Tumat OL. When you're above the tumata mate, or the tumata mate is above you, that's OL that's called nigiyah. Because there we look at it as if the tumah is touching you. And that's because of what we said before, that the tumah bukat vola bukat v'yoredet. Meaning, in the case when you're immediately above the tumah, or you're immediately below the tumah, then in terms of tumat OL, the technically the reason that you're tameh over here is not only because of OL, but because you're in line of the tumah. Since you're in line of the Tumah, we said before that Tumah, wherever it is, Tumah Tamate, goes all the way out of Rekia. It goes all the way down until deep depths of the ground. Unless there's something that stops it. When it's inside of an OL, it's contained inside of an OL, that contains the Tumah in place. So if you have a mate inside of a house, then the Tumah Tamate goes all the way up out of Rekia. But there's something that's stopping it. You have an OL now. That OL is Mafsik Chotzeitz, blocks the Tumah from continuing upwards. That means if you're outside the house and you're flying over the house, there's no tumah over there. Within the house, there are two types of tumah. Within the house, if you're directly above the mate inside the house, then you're tameh, not because technically of tumat ohel, but because of bukat vola. The tumah goes up anyway. That's what happens to tumat mate, and that's called negiyah according to Rava. There's another tumat mate that exists, which is even not opposite the mate, the tumah spreads when you have an ohel on top of it. That OL causes the Tumah to spread in both directions, meaning beyond the mate itself, beyond the Tumah itself. That's the difference between Bokat Vole and OL. OL spreads the Tumah beyond the location of where the actual Tumah is. It says now the Tumah goes up, and then the OL causes it to spread. I was looking at the equivalent of smoke, or the Ketoret in the Mikdash. It rises to the ceiling, and then it starts to spread to the sides. That's what happens to Tumah Bo'el. It rises to the ceiling, in a sense, it spreads to the sides, it covers everywhere around it that's inside the soil. But it stops by the ceiling. When you have tumah bukat voleh, bukat yoredet, then it doesn't spread to the sides, it goes up and down, but it goes up all the way, down all the way, unless there's a chotzeitz. When there's no chotzeitz, and you then go over it, you're basically coming into contact with the tumah. That's called negiya, according to Rava. Now, according to Rava, shapir mitokma ke Rabbi Yochanan. Then our Mishnah can be explained like Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yossi will be that position. Because according to Rava, any type of OL is considered to be negiya, with the exception of OL where you share a common roof with the tumah tameh. But in the case where you go over the tumah tameh, the tumah tameh goes over you, that would be considered negiya, and that's already a broad enough explanation in the Mishnah to say that when the Mishnah says negiya, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that also subsumes within it mahil, and that would be according to this view of Rava in the explanation of Rabbi Yossi's Shita. Tosafot then points out that both Abaye and Rava will disagree with Rabbi Zeira's position before, and they'll explain that stira in the Mishnah before based on their explanations here. That the difference between the oil that can combine and the oil that can't combine depends on what type of oil it is. For a bayi, if it's within a tefach, it will have a din of nigiya. If it's above a tefach, it won't have a din of nigiya. On the other hand, Rava will say that the case where it combines is where you're dealing with mahil alav, or you are mahil on it. But when there's hamshacha, there'd be no din of nigiya, and therefore the oil and the nigiya would not combine. And based on that, Tosafot says, it could have been that we could have explained the oil of our Mishnah as being the Mishnah in Ohalot. Based on that explanation of Rava, the Gemara just preferred to bring Rabbi Yossi Shita, because first of all, I have a name associated with it, and that's where Abaye and Rava's statements were made. But Tosafot early on discusses whether Rabbi Zeira accepts Abaye. And that's because Rabbi Zeira answered that it was Tumah Ritzutza, and Tosafot says, why didn't he just answer that it was within a tefach of the mate? So Tosafot gives two possible answers. Either, yes, he could have answered that, but he preferred this answer, meaning that he agrees with Abaye. Then he gets a second answer which says that maybe he doesn't subscribe to that view of Abaye, because Abaye believes anything that's within a tefach of the mate or tumata mate would have a consideration of negiyah if it's mahil on it, even if there's no tumah ritzutza, meaning that there's nothing covering the mate. You're just, you personally or your hand is going over the mate. Whereas for Rabbi Zeir, it's only true that it's considered negiyah when there's tumah ritzutza. So there has to be something covering it or squeezing it from the sides that makes it tumah ritzutza in order for it to gain the status of negiyah. But if you go to the Mishnah in Ohalot, the Rishonim that are explaining the Mishnah there, mix and match between the Shita, the Rava, Abaye, and Rabbi Zeira, which would seem to indicate that Abaye and Rava don't necessarily disagree with that Shita of Rabbi Zeira. Now the Gemara says, Omama Rava, Mina Aminola, how can I prove to you that I'm right about this? Titania, because we have a Tosefta, in which Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chavile Mita, Visrigei Chalunot, Chotzim, Ben Abayit Lalia, Shlolach Nistuma, Litzat Sheni, Prasan al Pnei Mate, Be'avir, if you put them on top of the mate in the air, Hanugea Geneged Negev Tameh, you touch opposite a hole, you are Tameh, Shlok Geneged Negev Tor, not opposite the hole, then you are Tor. So what we're speaking about here are the weaves of a bed. In their day, in order to have a bed, you created a wood frame or a metal frame. And then between the frame, you used to run either ropes or leather that was then woven together that created a base or the equivalent of what would hold the mattress, which they put hay and other items on it. And that created the bed that you slept on. So it's the equivalent of a cot-like scenario, but it's not a flat piece of cloth that's there. It's a woven piece of cloth. That woven piece of cloth, whether it's by rope or by leather, has spaces in between it. It's a mesh that sits there. Similarly in the windows. When you want to have the windows and have the equivalent of surigim, bars on the windows, or block people or animals from entering the house. Their day they had windows, but they didn't have glass on the windows. The windows was literally a hole in the wall. So either you have to put shutters there, but that closes everything up. If you want the air or light to come in, you have to create a mesh that goes over there that blocks the entrance of items into the house, but allows light and air to come in. Both of those meshes, if you take them and place them in a gap or a hole between the downstairs of the house and the upstairs of the house. So there's a hole that allows somebody to come upstairs in the house. In their day, when you went up and down the stairs, you had a staircase, but a lot of times it was a ladder, really, that allowed you to access the upper room. So there's a hole or a skylight in the roof of the lower part of the house, and that allows you to access the upper part of the house. If you take one of these meshes and lay them on top of that hole, that will stop the tumata mate from going from the lower part of the house to the upper part of the house. Anytime you have a poteach tepach, anytime you have a tepach wide opening, tuma can move. So if there had been no mesh there, and you had a mate in the lower half of the house, not only would the lower half of the house be tamei, tumat tamei, also the upper half part of the house would all have tumat tamei in it, because there's more than a tefach wide opening in the roof of the downstairs. So the upstairs, all the tumah would move upstairs. But if you put down this mat, this mattress weave, or this window weave, you put it down there, and Rashi adds the additional requirement that you are mivatel it. You're mivatel it there that you want to leave it there. You're not going to move it. If you're going to move it, then it becomes a kli, and it's not doing that purpose. But if you put it there, it's chotzeitz, bifnei atumah. It doesn't allow the tumah to go upstairs. Now, there are holes in it. Well, how does it block the tumah? Because each one of those holes is less than a tefach. Since each one of those holes is less than a tefach, even though there are holes there, it doesn't allow the tumah to rise. And that means even if the mate is sitting directly below this weave, it will not allow the tumah to go upstairs. If you walk over it, even on the empty spaces, you will not have tamei tumat hamei. That's the first thing the Mishnah says. The second thing the Mishnah says is, if you hang it over the mate directly, you don't put it upstairs, but you just hang it as a cover of some sort over the mate, then the din is, if you have your hand or you touch the area that's above the area where there is this weave, you're not tamei. If you go over an area where there's an airspace, then you will be tamei. That's the din that is brought in the Braita according to Rabbi Yossi. Because Rashi says, Dakshav lo nasu tikra. Now when you just hang it over the mate, it doesn't become a part of the roofing. The Ota kol satum. It's as if everything is sealed up. The fika kanugeh neked negev tamei. Therefore, if you go over the open space, you're going to be tamei. Because you're mahil ala mate. When you're not open in the open space, you're over the covered space where the ropes are, or where the weave is, then you're not going to be tamei because it's chotzeitz. So in the case where you mevatel it to the roof, it's successful at being chotzeitz, not only the area where it is, but even the airspaces in between. When you just hang it over the mate, it's successful at being chotzeitz for where there is actual material. If there's no material, then it's not chotzeitz bifnei amate. And then the Gemara says, hey chidami, how was the case over here that you put it over the mate? Ilema lamata mitefach, if you did it just within a tefach of the mate, Shaloka negeta nekev amai tahor. Then, even in the places where there is a material, why are you tahor? Mate biksutohu. It becomes, it's almost like acquired by the mate. Umate biksutohu mitame. So, when you have a mate in its clothing, the clothing doesn't become a chatzitza between the mate and that which is above it. It basically joins the mate, and then it's a mate in clothing, and everything above them is tame. So, same thing here. If you put this cover within a tefach of the mate, basically the mate acquires it, and it becomes a part of the mate, and then tumah of the mate should just extend upwards. There's no chatzitza now. And therefore you should be tamei no matter where you are above this mat. Ella, lav the malami tefach. So it must be a scenario where this weave is above a tefach above the mate. And there it says if you touch the areas that are covered, you're tahor. You touch the areas that are open, then you are tamei. Vikakari le no geya. And there it says, nogeya. The Braita said, if you have the case where you parsana pnei mate, you spread it over the mate, ha nogeya keneged hanekev. When you touch, open the open space. What do you mean nogeya? You're not touching the mate. You're just putting your hand above the air and space and it's calling it nogeya. So you see here that even though it's tumat oel that's happening, it's calling it nogeya. So this is Rabbi Yossi's shita that says that tumat oel is called nogeya. And Rava is proving his point that even above a tefach, above the mate, Rabbi Yossi still calls it nogeya. Not only when it's within a tefach of the mate, even when it's above a tefach of the mate, he calls it nogeya. So that's Rava's proof. But now for Abaye, Amar Abaye, the olam lamata mitefach. The case there is lamata mitefach because Abaye says that nogeya for Rabbi Yossi is only when it's below a tefach. When it's above a tefach, then it becomes tumata oel, and he won't call it nogeya anymore. But you said, well, if it's within a tefach of the mate, it becomes like the mate and his clothing. Mate biksuto mivatale. When you have a mate with its clothing, you're mivato the clothing to the mate because it belongs to the mate. It's the clothing of the mate. Hi, lo mivatale. Over here, you have no intention for that. You plan on taking this out again. You plan on using this again. You put it on top of the mate now temporarily. That doesn't become like the ksuta mate. That becomes like an OL on top of the mate. Umar says, well, if that's the case, v'tavi ketuma tmuna bokat v'ola. If Abaye is right, then it should not work as an OL. We said before, in order to be an OL, you have a need to be a minimum space of a tefach, cubed to be an ohel. That means there has to be a tefach wide, a tefach long, and a tefach high in order to be classified as an ohel. If you put this weave above the mate within a tefach of the mate, then you don't have tumat ohel anymore. It's sitting within a tefach of the mate. You don't have ohel because you have less than a tefach between the mate and the weave. Once you do that, you have what's called tumat ritzutza, what we saw before. And when you have tumah, that's tmunah, that's buried inside of something that doesn't have an ohel all around it to stop the tumah from going out, it's bokat vola, bokat v'yoredet. I mean, it goes out, it bursts out of that area. So according to Abaye, why are we talking about tumah ohel anymore? We should be talking about tumah bokat, and that means whether you're opposite the holes or whether you're opposite the area that's covered, you should be tameh because it's bursting out. It's not protecting, it's not creating an ohel. So Abaye says, kasav Rabbi Yossi, tumat tmunah eno bokat. Rabbi Yossi does not subscribe to that concept that when you have tumah that is encapsulated in a small area, that it's bokat v'ola. And when Abaye does this, that starts to create a problem for us in the Mishnah as well, which is that why isn't etzem akulit in the Mishnah, that which we just set up as being Rabbi Yossi, as saying that nogea means ohel? Maybe that's not the case. Maybe the case in the Mishnah is tumah bokat, because the marrow and the bone of the kulit is tumat tmunah. It's captured in there. There's no ohel there. And therefore, it should be bokat vola, bokat v'yoredet. And our Mishnah believes that that is mitameh, clearly v'negiyah, but even be'ohel, according to Rabbi Yochanan. And then how do you reconcile with that, with Rabbi Yossi being the author that says that tumat is not bokat, vola, bokat v'yoredet? So you have to say, as Tosafot notes over here, da'afagav the summer of Yossi, tumah tmunah eno bokat, modeh v'kiulit tumah shemitameh be'ohel. He agrees that a kulit tumah does mitameh boel, come over make miksuto, the mode Rabbi Yossi to mitameh. Similar to a mate in his ksut, he doesn't call that tumat bokat. Meaning that there are certain things that are so tightly connected to the tumat mate that they don't become like a tumat munah. They don't become like an ol that protects the tumat from breaking out. They simply become a part of the mate, like the mate in his ksuto, like the bone around the marrow. And since they become part and parcel of it, then they allow for tumah to go out of it and create tumat ohel and tumat maga, despite the fact that Rabbi Yossi does not hold that tumat munah breaks out of that area. And minat temra, how can I show you that that's true? Abaye says, I'll show you that Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of that. That's not. We have a Mishnah in Olot. Tevat ha-migdal, which is the drawers of a cupboard. The way Rashi translates it into la'az, a mishtayer, which is a basically a pantry. So you have a pantry. Sheishba poteach tefach, that has within it a tefach. Vein bitziata poteach tefach. Inside of it, it contains a tefach, but it doesn't have a escape, meaning it doesn't have an opening in it that is a poteach tefach. Tuma betocha, if you have tuma inside of this pantry, inside of these drawers, habayit tameh, the bayit is tameh. Tuma babayit, if there's tuma in the house, mashitocha tohor. What's inside of it is tohor. So technically, inside of it, you have a poteach tefach, which means that there's an ohel. And the tumah inside of it should not go out, and neither should tumah go into it, because an ohel protects against tumah and prevents tumah from escaping. So technically, if we just knew that information, the tumah that's inside of this pantry should not affect the house, and tumah in the house should not affect the pantry. But that's not what's said here. The Mishnah says that the tumah in the pantry affects the house. The tumah outside of the house does not affect the pantry. So we know that it is an ohel. There's something about the tumah on the inside that makes it that it's going to affect the house, and that's because mibneish derech tumah, let's say it, bein to derech tumah l'kanes. Because eventually, that which is inside of this pantry has to leave. And when it leaves, it's going to make the house tameh tumat ohel. So even though the pantry itself doesn't have a poteach tefach, which would allow the tumah to escape into the house, nevertheless, the end game is that this tumah is going to have to leave this pantry, and then it's going to be in the house. Since that's the end game, the house is tameh tumat tameh, even though there's no poteach tefach. On the other hand, when there's tumah in the house, the tumah in the house doesn't have to end up in the pantry. And therefore, since it doesn't have an opening of a tefach, the tumah can't get in there, and whatever's inside that pantry is protected from the tumat hameh. That's the view of the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yossi mitayer. Rabbi Yossi says you're door in this case. Mipnei, sheyachol hu lehotzia lechatzein, o lesorfa b'mkoma. That's not true. This kazayit min hameh never has to leave this pantry. You can either take it out half at a time, and therefore there's no tumah in the house because it's a chatzi kazayit, and that'll be fine. Or you can burn the pantry to the ground right there, and this kazayit amit will never leave the house. So I don't agree with the Tanna Kamma. Even if the mate is inside of the pantry, it is still only inside the pantry that's tamei. The house is tahor. Because that which the Tanakhama says, the tumah must leave the pantry, that's not true. The tumah could remain in the pantry, and you could burn it in its place, or you could split it in half and take it out in a way that doesn't cause tumah by taking out a piece at a time. Tosafot says, if that's the case, then why can't you do this with other situations? And Tosafot says here, v'nira demoda Rabbi Yossi agrees, ha-meit b'bayit, if you have a mate inside of a house, ve'lo p'tachim harbe, and there are many doorways and windows out of the house, kulan t'meim, all those, the frames, in the area of the frames of the windows and the doors are t'meim, v'nei shofa tumah latzei derech sham, because the tumah is going to exit one of those exits. The hotam b'meit, shalem, there we're talking about a whole mate, dein derech l'sorfa, ulanatcho pakot mikizayit. Rabbi Yossi has a limit to what he says. When you're talking about a kazayit min a mate, that's something that you would burn in place. That's something that you're going to cut up. When you're dealing with an entire cadaver that's in there, you're not going to say then, the exits are not tmeim because you don't have to take the mate out of here. You can just burn it in place. You can cut it up in place. He says, that is not proper behavior. He says, ain't derech lasot et zeh, which would seem to indicate that's not proper to burn a mate. It's not proper to cut it up. Other achronim are midayek, ain't derech means asur. Ain't derech means not just, that's not the way to do it. You may not do such a thing. You can't burn a mate. You can't cut up a mate. And therefore, there has to be a way for this mate to go out. And the Gemara tells us that until you pick the doorway that the mate goes out of, all the doorways and all the windows which are possible egresses for the mate are tmeim. All the frames are tmeim until you pick the doorway. And then retroactively, that doorway is the one that's tamei. All the other doorways are tehorim. It's a machloket or tanaim, but it's a tumah derabanan that we're speaking about. But Tosafot limits this heter of Rabbi Yossi, this concept of Rabbi Yossi, that you don't have to take the mate out to small pieces of a mate, insignificant pieces that would be burnt in place. Now where we're speaking about whole mate that has to leave the area. V'toni Seifa, the latter part of that Mishnah says, Hemida bepetach upitcha lachutz. If you put this pantry right in the doorway, and the exit from the pantry is outside the house. So now you can get this tumata mate out of this drawer without it ever entering into the house. Tumah v'tocha. If there's tumah in this pantry, habayit tahor. Now the bayit's tahor. You have an OL inside of that contains the tumah in the pantry. And now you have a way to exit it without it going into the house because the drawers open to the outside of the house. And now you can take it out without it ever going into the house. Tumah v'bayit. If there's tumah in the house, mash v'tocha tahor. What is inside of it is tahor because, again, the tumah in the house is blocked from coming into this pantry because the pantry is a self-contained ohel. So that in itself doesn't teach us anything about tumat ritzutzah or tumat bokat because all of these are classic cases of ohel. The only thing Rabbi Yossi added for us is that you don't have to take it out. And since you don't have to take it out, then even when it's in the ohel of the pantry, it doesn't make the bayit tameh. But then, mitoni Allah, we have a qualification there right on that. Rabbi Yossi mitaher. Rabbi Yossi is mitaher. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yossi is mitaher. We already have Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. What do you mean Rabbi Yossi is mitaher? Ahai. On what part of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi saying that it is tor? Ilema aseifa. If it's on the latter part of the Mishnah, then Tanakama nami toreka mitaher. What do you mean Rabbi Yossi is mitaher? Even the Tanakama says you're tor in that latter case of the Mishnah because there the drawers open to the outside and there's no tumah going to the house. It's tor in both directions there. Ella, the kamar tanakama, tuma tocha, habayit tamei. If it's tuma in the pantry that's in the house, there the tanakama says it's tamei. Imishum de terech tuma, let's say it. Imishum tuma tmuna bokat. You have a choice here. The problem is that the tuma inside of this chest, if it's an OL and a proper OL, it's going to make the house tamei when it leaves the pantry to leave the house. If it is less than an OL size in the pantry, then it's tumah bokat, it bursts out of the pantry, and it makes the house tamei tumat oil because it's not contained within the pantry. So what the Tanakhama says is, in the case where you're in the pantry, mimonaf shach, you have tumah here. You either have tumah because you have to exit from this oil of the pantry, and that's going to cause the bite to come tamei, or the pantry itself is not a sufficient oil. I mean, it's too small to be an oil, and therefore the tumah is bokat out of there and makes the house tamei. And as Rashi points out, the Gemara's midayek, that the Tanakhama has this position, from the fact that the Mishnah states that both of these cases are b'poteach tefach, that there is a tefach, there's an oel inside of this pantry, and in the latter case of the Mishnah, the pantry is standing on the edge of the house, and the only reason this works is because you have a poteach tefach in the pantry, and pitcha lachutz, and it opens to the outside. Implying there that even if it was pitcha lachutz, but there was less than a poteach tefach, that would be problematic. Or, as the first case in the Mishnah states, if the petach is inside the house and not to the outside of the house, both of those according to the Tanna Kamma would be problematic. The Tanna Kamma requires two things in order for it to be toler. Both that there is poteach tefach, that there's an ol inside the pantry. And number two is that the exit from the pantry is outside. From that you learn two dinim. One din is the fact that when it's open to the outside, that's the din that gives you the tara. But if it's open in the house, it's tmeah. And the second din, which is only when there's an oel inside the pantry, does it protect it. But if there's no oel inside the pantry, it's tumah, it's munah, then it would be bokat. Even when there's an exit from there to the outside, it won't help you because there's no oel in the pantry. To that, Rabbi Yossi responds, tahor. So I disagree with you that mimonah shuk, there's tumah over here. Bekamalei Rabbi Yossi, dekamar derech tumah latzeit, yochol lo tzi ala chatzein, ol besor fabim komab. And already Rabbi Yossi responded in the Reisha to one of the two claims about it exiting the pantry. That's not true. It's not imperative that you take it out of the pantry. To burn it in place and never take it out. You can't take it out as chatzik zeitim. Udika amart. And that what you said, tumat munah. If you have tuma that is trapped in a location, then bokat, it bursts out. Tumat munah, eno bokat. I think that tuma that is trapped does not bokat, does not burst forth out of that area. Now he's responding to the other claim that if it's less than an oil in the pantry, that tumah is then bokat and affects the house. But the Yossi says, I don't agree with that. It is not bokat. And therefore, that's by his proof that Rabbi Yossi believes that tumah tmunah, where you have tumah that's trapped. According to Rabbi Yossi, that doesn't mean automatically it's bokat out and bokat in. And that's what Rabbi says. When you put this mat within a tefach of the meit, that's tumah tmunah. And Rabbi Yossi believes that it's not bokat. And so therefore this will be an ol. If it's an ol, then whatever is opposite the covered space is protected. Whatever is opposite the open space is subject to tumah of ol because it's not protected or blocked by this weave that's there because the weave has holes in it. Those holes expose you to tumah ol of the meit. All right, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Kuf Chavav Amid Aleph.